Okay, good morning. Thanks for the invitation, Carlin, and Elena also want to remind. Okay, the topic of the talk is the joint analysis of clustering probes applied to a specific survey of galaxies, so observed actual survey, that is the Viper survey. This is a work that I did in collaboration with Enzo Bianchini Rometri, the master's student from Paris, Saclay. There is Inigo Saez Casares. And other people from the Random Vibers collaboration and previous collaborators, Federico Marulli and Michele Moresco. The outline of the talk is basically, in the talk, I basically describe, after a few remarks on where we stand in cosmology today, I'll describe the clustering as a cosmological tool, what we mean by galaxy clustering, and what are the implications of galaxy clustering for cosmological constraints. And then finally, show you the result of the analysis using the Viper survey. And I'll then leave you with some open issues of this analysis and conclusion and future remarks. So concerning cosmology, we have a good understanding, a very good understanding of our universe from really early epochs to late time. This is due from very basic assumption, coming from assumption of general relativity as our gravity theory plus cosmological principle. Let me also add inflationary and also add inflation as a main driver of the generation of our primordial perturbed density field. This framework allows us to describe so the background cosmology, so the evolution of volumes of the universe volumes in time, but also to trace the growth of structure. So we have as a model to trace the evolution of the density field. We trust so much this model that gives answer that we are actually don't really have all the tools to understand. In fact, we are left with many unresolved questions. Here lies the nature of the vast majority of what of content of the universe, almost 96%. That is made of something we really don't know. It is the, for example, the, there is the dark matter as a matter component, non-baryonic matter component, and dark energy that dominates the contribution of energy in the universe today, and also responsible for the accelerated expansion of the universe. Then we have, of course, we can ask all these questions, and all these questions will be for sure addressed in future survey, because we are entering really a period of a golden age for cosmology, as we are having a lot of surveys that will probe large volume of the universe, and mixing and using different probes will shed light on this information. And this is where the other point of this talk is that with one information we cannot probe everything. We need to put all the information together because we all live in the same universe, so we have to study most information that we have. The most of the information that we have. Among all the probes, the one I developed in my career so far is the clustering. Clustering is the description of the density field of the universe, starting from first principles. Our observable is the density of the universe around us, so is the density at a given position defined as a density constant. This is contrast. So the density at a given position relative to the background density of the universe. This quantity is not directly is measurable, of course, but it's not directly more. It's not possible to directly model, as we don't have access to the very first, to the very to the primordial fluctuation that the field as we see it today. We can only describe it in a statistical sense. For this reason, we instead of measuring the density field, we want to extract statistical information by measuring moments of the density field. The zeroth order moment, the mean, is zero by definition because it's the average over the volume of the density. That average of the volume is the background density. So, with the first moment that encapsulates information about the field is the variance. That is the two-point correlation function. And this is also the only moment that we need if the field is Gaussian, because it's also is described by its mean and its variance. But if non-Gaussianities are present from primordial physics or for late time evolution, we we want to probe also higher orders. And the first moment to look at is the triple correlation function. Or if you like, for the space, you can measure power spectrum as the variance and by spectrum as triple correlation function. So the main goal is to try to describe, to have to model this stuff and to measure them from observed density fields and get cosmological constraint out of it. Because the model that makes the density field that we have from is strictly related to cosmology. One example of clustering is cosmological gray background. We have a snapshot of the universe at very early epochs by looking at CMB maps. In particular, looking at mapping fluctuation in temperatures that directly talk about fluctuation in density. These maps, as you can see in the left part of the plot, is the slide, is actually one possible realization. What is important is its variance. We know from this kind of map that the primordial density field is linear and Gaussian. This has some consequences in terms of how we can interpret them. It means that the equation of motion can be linearized. So the theory that describes this density field is much more easy to be handled. And the second point, the fact that it's Gaussian, it means that we only need to measure the variance that is shown in the right plot as the angular power spectrum. The model, the theory that we have to model this works remarkably well. As we can see, the line is the best fit model of this line and provides basically all the information that we have from cosmology, a large part of it at least. But CMB has its own limitations. CMB is at one redshift and it's at very early epochs. We can do better than that, and it's worth doing that because we want to, by looking at density field as a functional redshift, we also get constraints from the evolution of the redshift for the density field itself. To look at that, we have to move to other traces of the density field. So from CMB, we move to galaxy clustering. So galaxy clustering is the measure of density of statistical properties of density field starting from looking from collection of galaxies. It's a lot of information to be extracted from, because we have access using galaxy surveys to different epochs, so we can extract signal from different epochs and tracing the evolution of structures. But we have to deal with some problems that go from theoretical problem to observational systematics to be included. In the panel, in the figures, you see a cosmological simulation of matter only, so no bionic physics here. You see that from early epochs, redshift equal 10, where the field is almost linear, redshift zero, the picture changes a lot due to the evolution via gravity. And in particular, the field becomes nonlinear. Nonlinear means that the density fluctuations are of the order of the unity or even much higher in the peak of these distributions. To get them, we can still use perturbation theory, but we cannot stop ourselves to include only the first order of the expansion. We need to test our model including more and more orders. This complicates the modeling from a theoretical point of view, but it's still doable. And the point here is to understand where we can stop in terms of expansion of density field to produce our observable or triple correlation function models. The other complication is that we observe galaxies, and galaxies are collapsed structures. So we want to trace that matter density field that contains the core of the cosmological information by looking at galaxies that only trace the peak of high density of this density field. The link between the two things is not really clear. What we do in general is to write the density field of the galaxies as a function of the density field of the matter, introducing a bias by the bias parameters that multiplies the different order of the expansion. And to provide a mode, to get a model for the triple correlation function, we play the same game. So we plug this into the correlation function. We plug this model into the correlation function. We get a model for it. So in some way we can also handle this kind of things in our modeling. And as an example, I show you the expansion, the equation, how the expansion is brought in the equation below, and now this propagates into the model for the two-point correlation function. The two-point correlation function for the galaxies at linear level is the two-point correlation function of the matter multiplied by a Bayes parameter squared. Finally, not finally, but another thing that is important to remind and to notice is that we don't see, we don't trace position density in commoving coordinates. We don't see trace objects in commoving coordinates. We have access of them, we have access only at angular coordinates and redshifts. And using redshifts can be problematic for different reasons, because all our statistics are defined as a function of commoving coordinates, so physical distances, but we don't have these distances. This is the problem. And we use redshift as a proxy of our radial distance, of radial distance of a galaxy from our set. This introduces two kinds of, this can introduce two kinds of distortion, geometrical distortions, that are one, that means that to go from redshift to radial distance to commoving distance, we have to assume a cosmology. And this cosmology is not necessarily the true one. This introduces a distortion in our final estimate that must be included in our analysis. I only mentioned this here, but this will not be treated in the results. But most importantly, we have the dynamical distortion. Redshifts are measured from spectra, from the spectra of galaxies, on top of cosmological redshift that contains information about the distance, there is also the information of the peculiar velocity, in particular the radial projection of peculiar velocities. And also is also influenced by how good we are at measuring this redshift, so the redshift error itself. This has impacts on the density field we probe. And we usually differentiate it into regimes, the linear regimes on the left and the nonlinear one. Nonlinear regimes is when velocities are driven by growth of structure. So when objects in fall over nodes or the distribution, so when structures grow and galaxies fall into clusters, for example. What happens here is that the direction of motions are along filaments in this sphere and is as the and strictly depend on the gravitational potential. So that is sourced by the density field that we are going to probe. Bottom line is that linear dynamical distortion are an extra source of information for our density field. So it's something that we like and we want to probe as well. And we are doing, and we'll do that in our analysis. Velocities in linear regimes instead is when particles are inside halos, so they are not, they lose memory, so where they come from, or the original gravitational potential, and the only velocity that is left is a random velocity inside a virialized halo. This is a signal that was cosmological clustering signal inside halos, and is treated as a nuisance parameter must be treated as a nuisance parameter, as does not provide any cosmological information. So again, how to get to go from density field to redshift space density field to two-point correlation function density field, we play the same game as we did before. We describe our density field in redshift space, and we see from the equation on top that is a function of the real space density field plus the divergence of the velocities, and this divergence of the velocity depends on the density field itself in linear regimes. And the parameter that controls the dependence is the linear growth rate f. This is a function of cosmological parameters. In lambda CBDM, this can be wrote as omega m to some exponent of something like 0.6 from general relativity. If we plug this definition of density in the two-point correlation function, we get a model for the redshift space two-point correlation function. We see that this introduces an anisotropy in the sense that the amplitude of clustering depends on the angle with respect to the line of sight. We can do one step further. Instead of describing the two-point correlation function in the two coordinates, we can expand on mu. That is something that one usually do and compute multiples of two-point correlation function. Since the behavior is like is mu squared, we don't expect to have this more than. So there's a square missing here. We do not expect to have information in odd multiples by definition, but also in even multiples larger than 4. So there is the reason why we go to the multiples, because in this way we compress the information. Now, here, redshift space distortion, as I told you before, are not important from cosmology, but must be included as a smoothing of the density field on below certain scales. So, just to conclude this part, again, just this brief introduction was just to give you the idea that we are able, from first principle and by heavily using a standard perturbation theory, to get out with a model for example purposes. I just show you for two-point correlation function examples in linear, using linear expansion. But this can be, of course, played we can play this game also for higher order to get two-point correlation function expanded at higher order of density field, and also to get a model for three-point correlation function. The point is that we produce this model. This is something that that is more or less stable in literature, that has already considered for this kind of analysis. But this analysis has been led in Fourier space using power spectra and by spectra, for example, in Guillemarin 2013 in Ivanov. This is, as far as I know, this has never been applied for joint analysis in configuration space. That means using two-point and three-point correlation function. The reason of that are historical. Are not, maybe we, if you have doubts, we can discuss it later. So this is just to, I hope that I give you the idea that we know how to handle this kind of things and how to produce model to consistently model this kind of statistics when extracted from galaxy clustering. Now let's move to the application we did. We choose to measure clustering statistics starting from the galaxy observed by the Viper survey. This is a survey that has been concluded a couple of years ago, if I remember correctly. And it's probably second public data release can be easily found. The characteristic of this survey is that it's a small area, 24 degrees, divided in two patches, but it provides, but it measures spectroscopic redshift, so we cannot worry about spectroscopic redshift errors for a lot of galaxies. So the density is very high with respect to other surveys at the same redshift, or even a lower redshift. This combination of things allow us to probe, so to measure the clustering properties of this distribution of objects up to intermediate separation for both two and three-point correlation function. The good point is that the Viper's collaboration did already a lot of work on that, and provide a lot of results based on study of two-point correlation function in terms of cosmological parameters, but also research of the astrophysical interests. And the good point of that is, together with the data release itself, we also have all the material to handle observational systematic when doing our measurements, and also full control of the window function effect. This here is very important. We'll skip discussing clustered estimator. This is very basic. I just mentioned that once we have all the galaxies positions and random position, we basically count pairs and triplets and compare these kind of things. I'll show you first of all the measurement of the two-point correlation function for the Viper survey, divided into redshift bins. The points here are the monopole and quadrupole two-point correlation function expanded for the polar measured two-point correlation function of the Viper galaxies. And on top of that, we also have mocks of this survey. There are a collection of 150 catalogs that reproduce fairly well the survey volume and all systematics effects. This can be used as a test for systematics effects in our analysis, but more importantly, they will be used to compute errors and covariance matrix. And the errors are the ones shown as the error bar shown. And we can see by the comparison, the mean of the mock, that is the continuous lines and the points, that the mocks reproduce very good. We can really trust this model. The fact that we measure a zero quadrupole is really the fact that we have velocities, linear velocities, large scales. So this is really the smoking gun of growth perturbation at that scale. So this is something very, very standard. So that also this already been already published. What's new is the measure of three-point correlation function for a large set of triangles, going from very small triangles, so triangles of size of 5 megaparsec, to 40 megaparsec. Here I only showed one that I finally used in the analysis, so from 50 megaparsec side to 40, as well as black dots for the two redshift bins. Again, we can use MoC, and we find again a remark, a very good agreement between MoC and the data and the data points. And this is less obvious for three-point correlation function, as MoCs, as far as I know, should have been produced to reproduce the two-point correlation function. Bottom line of that is that we can use this MoC to with the same purposes that we did for two-point correlation function, so to measure error and covariance. Each point is in this paper, in this plot, is the three-point correlation function for one specific triangle. And we can also notice that the signal is very small, means that Nungashang is different than zero. So Nungashang is at present, but it's very small, especially at very large scales. Just to show you covariance matrix, in this plot I showed the cross-correlation matrix computed with the MoCs of two entry-point statistics. The autocorrelation matrix are on the diagonal of this block matrix, and bottom part the two-point correlation function multiples covariance, and the upper part the covariance on the 3-point. We also see non-zero signal in the cross-correlation, in cross-covariance, that is mainly due to the function effects and also from non-linearities in the density field. So this was about the measurements. Just as an illustrative way to show you how the measurements of these kind of things looks like in a real survey. Now let's go to some results. Let's start with two-point correlation function. Two-point correlation function is basically a check test that we are doing everything well, because as I already said several times, this has been at the center of many studies in the Vipers collaboration. For example, I mentioned Pezzotto et al. 2017, that measured the same exact thing that we are measuring here to provide a constraint on F as a function of redshift, and also on F sigma 8, sorry, because there is the degeneracy between the two parameters. And also, I want to mention the work by Delatore et al. That joining two-point correlation function of galaxies and of the galaxy shear spectrum, it derives a joint constraint on F and sigma 8. The value of F sigma 8 that we found from this kind of analysis in comparison with the other six is absolutely in agreement, so showing that we are not doing anything wrong in our analysis, very good. And we also did a test on what changes on these parameters when we exclude very small scales. The effect can be found, excluding small scales, can be found on the right part, right plot. We see posterior for the parameters that controls dynamic distortions, F sigma 8 and sigma 1, 2 that controls nonlinear dynamics. When we exclude very small scales, that is the blue scale, the blue contours and histograms, we really are not able to provide a constraint for sigma for the nonlinear dynamics. This has a less than one sigma impact on the final measurement, also for F sigma 8. But this serves as a demonstration that sigma 1, 2 is only needed when we want to probe really some very small scales.
Sorry, what is sigma 1, 2?
Sigma 1, 2 is the velocity dispersion inside ELOS. It can be, you can be seen as that. It's basically basically models non-linear part of the velocities. And when you don't use a very small scale, you cannot probe it, because you are looking at two ELO terms that is inside the ELOS, outside ELOS.
So can I ask a question?
Of course.
What model do you use for the correlation function in non-linear scales?
On non-linear scales, I use SPT model with one loop.
Okay.
This is basically including a second order bias, of course, because we are we are fully developing the model for bias at quadratic order. So this proved to be good on moderate to large scales, but not very good at small scales. And in fact, we at the end, we will not probe very scales below 10 megaparsec in our final analysis.
And also, why do you use the correlation function instead of the power spectrum?
Okay, the correlation function for two reasons. First of all, just because correlation function is one of my favorite, is what I usually use as for my analysis. This is the personal answer. The other answer is that the volume here is under the window function here is under control, but the effect of window function must be propagated to model of the power spectrum. That can be complicated. While two-point correlation function directly gives you the estimate of clustering with the window function effect included. So this is to be more on the safe side. More. Two-point correlation with the galaxies that we, with the number densities, so the number of galaxies that we have, configuration space clustering is more convenient because we have to compare for a bunch, for thousands of galaxies that is not unfeasible in terms of computational time. So this is the practical answer. Anyway, the answer is that window function is more under control using configuration space for this kind of survey. Okay, this is for two-point correlation function. Now let's move to the new part of the analysis, that is the analysis of three-point correlation function. Again, the points are the measurement of three-point correlation function, and the blue and black line are the best fit model. The blue line is best fit using only three-point correlation function, while the black line is when you use both two and three-point correlation function to constrain bias parameters and dynamics and FC and F, so the linear grow rate. So we see that for this first test, we see that there is consistent between three-point correlation function information alone and when joined with two-point correlation function. But the most important part here is that three-point correlation function leak really looks into non-Gaussianities. This means that we have a direct probe of second order density field at second order, so to second order bias. That is the gamma in the lower part of the corner plot. Here we found, we really probed the value of gamma because three-point correlation function directly depends on it. This corner plot, I show the three parameter combination of B and sigma 8, that is the amplitude, that this combination is the one that controls the amplitude of 3-point correlation function, overall amplitude, gamma, that is the second order bias, and beta, that is the linear growth rate divided to B1. Here, we are only probing the monopole of 3-point correlation function, so we don't have information along the separated with respect to the line of sight. So we do not expect to probe F. And in fact, you can see from the contours and also for the histogram, the value of beta that we found is degenerate with the amplitude of the three-point correlation function. The test that we did here is that if the test basically has to probe to what scale the basic model, the three-level model for three-point correlation function works. To do that, we reproduce the fit using different minimum triangle size in our analysis from 10 to 20 megaparsec. And on top of that, there you can see the blue, green, the blue, red, and green curves. On top of that, we put also constraints from two-point correlation function, just that serves just as a benchmark to see what is the scale that we have to choose at the end. We see that results are really, really good using scales larger than 15 megaparsec. We would have been on the safe side using 20 megaparsec, but that at that point we are excluding a lot of information. So we accept to use 15 megaparsec as systematic errors are still below statistical ones. When using small scales, nonlinearities enters. And the nonlinearities that we are not accounting for in the model enters, and we can see it clearly in a wrong value of the amplitude B times sigma 8 to the third. So this is the reason why we exclude this case, because otherwise we would have wrong constraints, final constraints. So these are the results for the two analyses done separately. Now let's join it. When we join, what do we expect? We expect, first of all, to gain information of the overall parameters, and that's what we found. But most importantly, since we know that the two probes depends differently on the B signal, the bias, the linear grade rate, and on the amplitude of clustering that is parameterized by sigma 8, we expect to break these degeneracies since the two probes depend differently on these two parameters. And in fact, that's what we partially see here. And for example, if you look at the contours for B1 and sigma 8 in the first column, third row, you see the joint constraint on B and sigma 8 after you fit the two probes together. And then on the curves show the degeneracy direction that are written in the first equation of this slide. So the constraint lies more or less in between. This helps break all the other degeneracies, so the F sigma degeneracies, allowing us to probe these three parameters separately. We did it for the two. This is for this corner plot shows only the results for the two redshift, for the second redshift bin, but we did also for the first, of course. So what we can probe is the evolution of F as sigma is a function of redshift. Let's start with F. That is more or less problematic. Let's say in this way. So if we compare the value of F with prediction with the Planck 18, we see that we found consistent results, and also our results are consistent with previous findings using the Viper surveys by De La Torre 2017. For sigma 8, we are still consistent within one sigma with results with De La Torre et al., so with Viper itself, but below the prediction for sigma 8. This is something that probably has something to do with the systematics of the model that we have to account in a future work. Just as an exercise, we can see how this information propagates to parameter at redshift 0. We can revert what we found using the formula for S sigma 8 and F. Sigma 8 redshift 0 depends on sigma 8. Sigma 8 at the given redshift depends on sigma 8 redshift 0 multiplied by the growth factor. It depends on cosmological parameters. And the same holds for F that depends on omega m redshift 0. So if you play this game, we found constraint for omega m and sigma 8 redshift 0 from the two probes, and we see basically the same thing that we saw before. In practice, if we compare with these constraints from the two redshift bins, red and blue contours, with prediction from Planck 18, F that is probing omega m is consistent with Planck, while sigma 8 is a bit in tension with it. So this is the main finding. We are happy that this worked, but not really happy, because we recognize that we weren't fully able to exploit the full information from the higher orders when used together with two-point correlation function. We address at least two reasons for that. The main, most important one is that we had to exclude smaller scales, because our model, that is the most basic one for galaxy three-point correlation function in redshift space, fails to reproduce very small scales. And for sure, when future surveys with much more high statistical precision will kick in, for example, Euclid, we really want to probe two-point correlation function even at these small scales. And for this reason, we are working at Roma Tre with Massimo Guidi, within a PhD thesis, that we aim to probe to extend prediction for three-point correlation function even at one loop, so entering to higher order of expansion of the density field. The second reason is that we measured directly the covariance matrix using MOX. This is quite standard in clustering analysis, but has its one limitation, one enormous limitation, that is that it needs time to be computed. These times propagate when we have much more MOX, thousands of MOX, or enormous volumes. for three-point correlation function, this is a problem that must be tackled in a more clever way. One possibility is to use theoretical covariance matrix for higher order correlation. For the reason, we activate a master thesis with Anna Chiara Binetti from University of Milan that is exactly looking at that, how constraints, so changing definition of covariance, how if the constraints stay well, and also how to model covariance matrix. So I leave you with my conclusion, just I believe that I briefly remind you. We developed a likelihood analysis to get constraint from joint analysis of two and three point clustering in configuration space. And this is the first time that framework has been applied to a survey of actual galaxies, so the Viper survey. When considered separately, the probe provide consistent results between each other, and in joint analysis, they show their strength because we were able to break the generalities between parameters. In particular, we independently probe linear rate and amplitude of fluctuation. We have to deal with systematic error introduced by three-point correlation function modeling, in particular when we want to use larger survey that with much smaller statistical error. And also we have to consider alternative techniques for computational covariance matrix. Thank you for the attention.
Thank you, Alfonso. We run a bit out of time. Sorry. No worry. You got already a couple of questions. Is there any other question or comment I have, but I prefer to wait for other people rising the hand. So I see on the chat question. Wait, yes, please.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Many questions.
Just one.
First one. At which redshift can we consider today that the three-point correlation function is zero?
Which redshift? In practice, never, because we really have, because nonlinearity enters for other reasons. If you want to probe a redshift galaxies, nonlinearity enters from the bias. So zero correlation, or even for redshift space distortion. From a practical point of view, this never happens, I think. But the signal is very small, even redshift 2. I never checked this number precisely. But really, there are other sources on non-Gaussianities other than non-linearities, even primordial ones that can be constrained by the three-point correlation function.
Okay.
See another question from, maybe we can shift to Julian, and then eventually Guillaume later.
Hi, thanks for the talk. I'm Julian Bautista from CPPM. Sorry for sneaking into this talk. I was wondering, have you tested, so you have 153 mocks, have you tested your model fitting those mocks where you know what's the value of F, you know what's the value of sigma A, and so then you can actually choose what's the minimal R scale that you use on your analysis based on the tests on mocks instead of doing the test on the data itself. And then also you can use that to get an estimate of systematic errors you get on your cosmological parameters.
No, okay, thanks for the question. Of course we did. For two-point correlation function, this has also been published in previous works. They found that the model for that we that's the same model that we are using is fine, fairly reproduce the cosmology of the mock. For three-point correlation function, we did so we reproduce this test and find basically the same thing. For three-point correlation function, there is only a moderate tension when using not the mocks, but the mean of the mocks. So it's basically a larger volume. Then there's a minimum, when you use 20 megaparsec, you will be already on the safe side. 15 megaparsec introduces a less than one sigma systematics that we, anyway, in the case of our data set, disappears because the error bar becomes larger. So this is a test that we did. and for sure we will publish the result. Anyway, 20 megaparsecs should be already on the safe side for three-point correlation function, but we decided to include a little more, to include some more signal going much a bit below 50 or 50 megaparsecs. So, so to answer your question, yes, we did this test.
Thanks.
Other question? Could you just go back to the plot showing the 3-point correlation functionalities, that one, yes, no below.
Wow.
Okay, and explaining the rationale of the points. I identify different configuration triangles, but several points. Can you just explain?
Yeah, can I? This
plot?
Can I just show us another thing?
Sure.
Okay. This is the way usually two-point correlation functions are presented.
Mm-hmm.
You focus, for example, on the first panel. This is this had another purpose. You fix two sides and you change the third side. And then all the points are the three-point correlation function with two sides fixed and one varying. And the shape of this, the three-point correlation function, this is U shape, meaning that you have more probability of finding three galaxies aligned, because for the elementary structure of the universe. This is how measurements are usually presented. What we are doing here is to try to, I'm going back to the plot, okay. To put all the triangles for different configuration all together. So for example, this branch here is exactly this part here.
Okay.
So we are only probing configuration with this by keeping this. Triangle order. This So when you put this, you are only probing angles larger than 60 degrees. But this is, but you avoid repetitions. This also allows you to better treat your covariance and to exclude more easily points as a function of the scale, because you only have to put something on R12. It's just an alternative way.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay.
Common to buy for this is common for bispectrum analysis, but never did.
If I remember correctly, Guillaume had a lot of questions. Maybe a second one, and then eventually we can stop if nobody else.
Yes. At the introduction, you talk about that. You said that the 2-point and 3-point correction function are never applied in configuration space, if I remember correctly.
Together.
Mm-hmm. Together, yeah. So by that, you mean compute something with the covariance matrix of 2-point?
Yeah, for many problems.
But that, okay.
You can conclude your question.
You know, that was the end of my question. You show a plot who do this, who does that thing who were never applied. With the covariant matrix of 2-point and 3-point correlation function, if I remember also.
This one, you mean?
Yeah.
This is my measurement. This is my actual measurement from Vandermonk. Yeah. This has been done.
Okay.
Separately for 2 and 3-point correlation function. The point here, this is what I'm doing in Euclid, is that 3-point correlation function is expensive in terms of computational time. It relies on computing triplets.
Mm-hmm.
So algorithms for three-point correlation function are in general slow. And when you have to repeat this measure for a lot of mocks, it's even more slow because it propagates as a number of mocks. So the reason why we are looking also for alternative covariance is this one, because we cannot really probe for example, the Euclid volume that is huge. Is the measurement thousands of times. We just run out of time in our machine to do other stuff. So, and this is also one reason why the three-point correlation function is usually less popular than bispectrum, its Fourier space counterpart. And also the reason why these are more rare, it's more rare to find this kind of analysis in literature. But now, since we have improved estimators for three-point correlation function, where improved means more efficient estimator for three-point correlation function, this is becoming more feasible. We start to see a lot of papers on that. because measured three-point correlation function is becoming more feasible. The next step is to join the information of 2 and 3 point.
Mm-hmm. And also in your slide 12, for example, I see.
This one.
What is the blue and the orange curves?
Okay, probably I went a bit fast on that. The blue curve, maybe I can also here go from one to another. If you look at here, when you compute or produce model for 2-point correlation function in Reshi space, you want to trace the scale separation, but also the dependence on the line of sight, because the dependence on the line of sight is where Reshi space distortion enters. So you can compute 2-point correlation function in this binding, or you can integrate over mu, computing multiples of this stuff. And these are the multiples. So this is the monopole, integrating on the polar at a zero order in the harmonic space, and the quadrupole. In principle, you can go to whatever multiple you want, but even odd multiples are zero by definition for the modeling, and you don't expect to see much more information than the quadrupole, the hexadecapole, that is L equal 4. In this case, since the far way is small, and we don't have much more signal in the L equal 4 multiple, that is the hexadecapole, so we just plot the monopole and the quadrupole.
Okay. Thank you.
I think that maybe we should stop here. Okay, we take so long as. Thank you very much. No, it's fine. No, we have not so many opportunities to talk about this stuff. So, thank you again, Alfonso. Just for other time, as meant for the next week, we'll have a talk by Fabien Louvet on similarities and differences between low and high mass star formation. So, a different topic. And let me also remind you that on the GECO wiki page, you can find the talk, the video of the talks that you can download. And that's it. Thank you very much, and see you next week. Hello, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.